When I'm looking at the next 12 months of my life, what I do not have on the books and what is impossible for me to have on the books is a trip to Sicily. However, the next best thing to having my own adventure in Sicily was reading Joe Piazza's new novel, The Sicilian Inheritance. It is a vacation in a book. If your vacations were sexy murder mysteries that also dive deep into generational trauma, but not in too heavy of a way, it is the perfect book to take on a plane. It is the perfect book to read next to your public pool while taking breaks to yell at your kids. It is the perfect book to get you out of a reading slump, and it is available now wherever you get books.
Support for today's episode of Under the Influence comes from OneSkin. As many of you know, I'm on a mission to smooth out my skin and make it look perfect and dewy and glowy and lovely for this upcoming book tour. I've been doing a lot of the things lately, the things that 43-year-old women do to their skin to achieve such a look. And one of those things is OneSkin's two-step approach to healthier skin. I've been trying a lot of things, and this is one that's been sticking in my routine. The products are powered by a scientifically proven peptide, which sounds very fancy, and I don't know exactly what it means, but it targets lines and wrinkles right where they start, in your cells. Yes, yes. And I know that we all kind of want to turn back the clock. I don't really want to turn back the clock. I don't want to look like Jack Nicholson when I get interviewed about the Sicilian inheritance. That's it. And OneSkin helps me do that. Our listeners are getting 15% off OneSkin products using the code Influence when you check out at oneskin.co. That is 15% off OneSkin products using the code Influence at oneskin.co. Hey, y'all. Hi. So today we're going to talk about two things that we don't talk about nearly often enough: career setbacks and women's ambition. And these two things have way more to do with one another than we might think. I genuinely believe that our ambition only increases or has the potential to increase after a setback. The Sicilian Inheritance was initially rejected, that first draft that I wrote of it. And at first, it made me feel terrible and made me want to put it in a drawer and or rip it up and throw it in a fire. And I sat with that for a while. And eventually, it made me want to write the shit out of it and make it the biggest book I possibly could. And that's what I did. It's been 4 years, 4 years since then, and now it comes out in 2 weeks. And I love this book so much. I didn't expect that setback to set me on this path, but it did. It did. We never know what's going to happen. We never know what's going to happen. Many of you have messaged me when you've been laid off or when you haven't been able to get back into the workforce after a maternity pause. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring on both of today's guests. We will be hearing from speaker, strategist, and all-over hype woman, Amanda Wagner, about why ambition should never be considered a dirty word and why we should own our ambition more and be allowed to be ambitious in all of the things. We can be ambitious in our careers, in our parenting, in our relationships, in our gardening. We can have ambition in all of the things, and all of them are equally valuable. They are. But first, I decided to call up my friend, the author and journalist Amy Schoenthal. Amy just released her first book this week. Yay! It's called The Setback Cycle. We've given away copies on the Substack, and we'll be giving away more. It's wonderful. And it's all about working through life's inevitable setbacks and coming back stronger than ever. Amy is here today to talk about her own career setback after maternity leave and how it ended up changing her life for the better.
So I want to talk about setbacks. I don't think we talk about setbacks enough. I don't think we talk about how they can be valuable for our lives. And we have a very negative view of failure. How can setbacks actually be good for us?
Setbacks are not fun, and I'm not going to pretend that they are, but when they happen, and setbacks are inevitable. We're all going to experience them. But when they happen, we have to fight that instinct, that urge to ignore them. That's the biggest thing I uncovered in my research, mm-hmm. that everyone wants to, like you said, avoid failure, ignore discomfort, and just barrel through any negative experience and like pretend it's not happening. I'm guilty of this. This was
totally
such a part of my own setback story. And what I've really learned, and I try to do, but it's hard because it doesn't come naturally to me because I've been conditioned like the rest of us. What I try to do now, if I'm having a negative experience or some interaction leaves me very uncomfortable, I try to like sit with that discomfort. And that's because that's how we learn. That's how we grow. You sit with the discomfort. You try to understand, what is this telling me? What are the clues? And why? Why is this affecting me so much? Because that's going to give you the information you need to come out of your setback. I've had many setbacks. I came back from maternity leave and I was so excited to dive back in. Say what you will about that, but that was my attitude towards work. I was excited to go back to work. I was just one of those people that said, okay, like, I love my kid and I want to be the best mother ever, but I miss my career and I want to go back to it. I only had 12 weeks of maternity leave, so it wasn't that long. And I went back and I remember saying to my manager, okay, like, what's the status of these accounts? Let's go. And he said in exact words about this one account, you don't have to worry about that anymore. I will never forget those words. What happened was, the people who had replaced me, I had two people replace me. They were amazing. They're friends of mine. They're wonderful. They're talented. They're great at their jobs. They replaced me and they did a great job. And the accounts sort of changed and evolved over a 12-week period. And they wanted to continue running these businesses. So we had this, you know, difficult conversation and I supported it in theory. You know, I wanted all the opportunities for these people. And I still had one account to run, not three, but one. And I was bummed. I said, okay, like, I want to give this to them. But also at the same time, where does that leave me? What am I going to work on? You know, and there was no consideration given to that. It was just sort of like, figure it out. And so I spent the next few years basically rebuilding my entire portfolio of businesses and things that I worked on. And that didn't feel great, but I did it. I rebuilt everything and I, you know, kind of came out of that setback. But at the same time, I also explored career opportunities outside of that day job. It's not a coincidence that my freelance writing career kind of took off in 2018, 2019, because my daughter was born in 2018. I came back to work in 2019. And what happens when you sideline an ambitious woman or a mom? Becoming a mom is like the such a thing that like skyrockets someone's ambition. I wasn't just going to sit there and like wait around for something to do. So I always had this freelance writing. I'll call it a hobby. It was something I always did. I mean, I graduated with a journalism degree. I've been writing since I graduated college in the early 2000s. So I just kind of leaned into that more. And you know what that led to? You know, more and more visibility, more high-profile people seeking stories that I would write, more speaking engagements. You and I met at one of those speaking engagements, right? At Mom 2. We were on the same panel. It was so much fun. But
well,
like,
and tell people about some of the crazy people that you've gotten to interview because of this.
I was asked to interview Senator Mazie Hirono. That was such a big one. She's like the badass senator from Hawaii. Like, she's so freaking cool. Norma Kamali, Tracy Ellis Ross, all the Peloton instructors. Like, you know, Joe and I like bond over our love for Peloton. I was on a ride in, and I feel like we should tell listeners the outfit that I'm currently in. I am in my full.
You're wearing a Peloton sweatshirt right now.
I'm wearing a Peloton sweatshirt, but underneath I am like head to toe. What is it, like cheetah animal print? Because
you're a full mob wife right now.
I'm full mob wife in honor of the Sicilian inheritance. And this outfit was sent to me by our friend Kendall Toole. She's a Peloton instructor who has this new collaboration with an apparel company called Spiritual Gangster, and I'm in full mob wife attire for Joe today. And Kendall is one of the people in the book. So,
yeah. Yeah. You interviewed so many people in the book about their own setbacks. Do you have a favorite story?
I do not, because these are like my children. I do not have a favorite. I know you do.
I have a favorite child.
I probably do. Depending on the day, have like a story that I'm more drawn to, but they're very different stories. You know, some cover.
They're all very different stories. I love Robin Arzon's story. Robin is a Peloton instructor. Can you tell us just like a tidbit of that story?
Of course. So Robin has had many setbacks throughout her life, and she talks very openly about them. But the one I chose to focus on, I actually met Robin when I interviewed her after she had come back from her own maternity leave. And she, I think, showed that experience in a very different way than society had seen to date. You know, she was working out the whole time. She was one of the first Peloton instructors to really like be visibly pregnant and continue to lead workouts throughout her pregnancy. So that's when I met her. But the setback that I talk about in the book is the one where she was getting her job at Peloton. And at the same time, that's when she was diagnosed with diabetes. And all of a sudden, she had this whole identity shift. She was leaving her corporate job as a lawyer to become a full-time fitness instructor. She had become an ultra marathoner, like her whole identity was shifting into this fitness realm. And all of a sudden, she's diagnosed with this disease that people do not associate with fitness and health. And yet, so many very, very fit and healthy and athletic people have this. I found out even while writing the book that I'm pre-diabetic. I eat healthy. I love exercise. Do you know what I mean? Like, people just have the wrong idea about this. And diabetes is something that
so many people deal
with. And so she said, okay, if this is what I'm dealing with, let's figure out how to deal with it. How can I continue to lean into this fitness instructor lifestyle while dealing with, you know, this condition that I have now been diagnosed with? And she said, I think she said to her endocrinologist, when they gave her the diagnosis, okay, so how do I run this ultra marathon in a few weeks? And she figured it out, and she didn't. She talks about it. She sports her insulin patch on like every ride and kind of shows people that like this diagnosis does not need to define you. You may have it, you may deal with it, but it's not your entire identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I genuinely think that women are very good at using setbacks to say, what comes next? How can I channel this? Or, you know, or that's what we want to do. And I mean, I think that, you know, so many women I know have limitless ambition and we just want more and more places to channel it.
So true. So well said. We want more and more places to channel it. And that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
I know you've
more
been
and more
there
places
too.
To channel it.
Yep.
Totally. Totally. I mean, I want a nap right now, but
nobody channels it more than you.
It's a lot of channeling right now. But I do think that the world is not always kind to ambitious women. We talk a lot about that in the Sicilian Inheritance. I mean, it is a lot of food and wine and sex, but there's also women's ambition and agency, friends. And we are going to take a quick break here. And when we get back, we're going to talk with our next guest about channeling that ambition and why ambition shouldn't be a dirty word for women. And now on to ambition. Because once you have a setback, you have to have a certain level of ambition to get back where you want to be. To talk about that, I'm bringing on a woman who is just an inveterate hype woman for other women. Yes, this is what I want to be. I want to be your biggest cheerleader.
My name is Amanda Wagner, and I am a business strategist and speaker, and I am one of those people that is really shameless about my ambition. I am fascinated by ambition. I was just accepted into a PhD program because I want to study ambition and how it helps us make decisions as female entrepreneurs. And I want to be at the scale of Oprah.
I love that. Do you? I mean, I really love that. Like, yeah. Yeah, you're going to be Oprah. Just say it to the world. Just like, I'm going to say we're going to make the Sicilian Inheritance an instant New York Times bestseller, right?
Yeah. Have we hit the magic number that you're not allowed to talk about, but kind of talk about?
We just hit the magic number actually this morning. So, yes.
I am so excited.
We still have a lot more books to sell. So everyone listening, pre-order your book. It's not even really pre-ordering the Sicilian Inheritance anymore because it's going to be here so fast that it's like real ordering at this point.
Yeah. Buy the book now. And then it's like a present when you get it because the money's already gone. So it's going to show up at your door.
Gone. I know. And I love pre-ordering actually because I forget. I forget that I just ordered something
100%.
And then it arrives and it's a nice surprise to me. Exactly. Instead of a package arriving and it's toilet paper, which is what it usually is.
Fair enough. I have been thinking a lot about how you're like, I'm a marketing monster. I'm like, no, you are a sales machine. No guilt. There is no sleaze in sales. You shouldn't have to take a shower after. I am on board to promote the shit out of the Sicilian Inheritance. I was also thinking, I'm like, who else needs this?
Who else should we give it to besides Oprah?
Okay, well, Oprah, we have some Oprah we need to talk. Also, Brene Brown, we need to talk. But I'm thinking teachers. So in the States, school year wraps up in May. I'm like, no teacher needs another mug. Get them a book.
It's a great gift for a teacher for the end of the year. 100%. I love this idea. I love it. Today's whole episode is going to be about ambition and women. And I love what you said about don't call yourself a marketing monster. And I think so many women, we're ashamed to talk about our ambition. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't normally say, oh, I'm ashamed, I'm nervous. But then why do I cower from saying that I want this thing for my book?
And correct.
You are a person who studies women and ambition. What have you seen when it comes to women and ambition?
Oh, we are cowering. There are so many things tied up in ambition that if we are too ambitious, we are cutthroat, we are at all costs. We have to buy ourselves flowers because we have pushed away all the people in our lives who could possibly love us.
Exactly. I think for too long, and in so many movies and in pop culture, we see ambitious women as bad.
Totally.
And you know, I'm going to throw it out there. I was watching the SAG Awards or clips from the SAG Awards because I don't watch TV in real time last night. And Anne Hathaway was there with Emily Blunt and Meryl Streep. Okay. And they were recreating the scene from A Devil Wears Prada. And Miranda Priestly, Anna Wintour, is a bad guy in that. When she's just an ambitious woman. Okay. That's all she is. But 100%. we turn ambitious women into villains in media.
Yep. And they are. They're the villains. They're the monsters. They are cutthroat. They'll do anything. And they're cold-hearted. And they don't take care of their children. And they don't love their families. And their husbands are meek, quiet, tired men. No, none of these things are true. And for me, when I talk about ambition, when I experience ambition, I say it's like this pilot light inside of me. And ambition is a tool. It helps me get more of what I want. So when I introduce myself and I say I'm a speaker, I'm a business strategist, what I really am is a hype woman, and I am here to pour gasoline on your pilot light.
I love that. And I think that all women need to remember that we should be hype women for other women.
Yes. Regardless of where you choose to put your energy, where you choose to spend your time, I don't care what that is. What I do care is that you have somebody on your team to hype you the hell up.
Exactly. And we all need that. You know, one of the things that I'm trying to do every single day, this is one of my like little exercises that I do every day. I try to text one of my girlfriends or email them, or I'll send them a video just telling them they're fucking awesome.
Hell yeah. Please.
And at different things, right? So I'm like, hey, I just want you to know, I saw you walking your kids to drop off this morning, and you're a fucking awesome mom. Mm-hmm. Or I just read this article you wrote in Philadelphia Magazine, Regan Stevens, and you're an amazing goddamn writer. Mm-hmm. So just like little, and it doesn't have to be long, right? It's one sentence. And I send one sentence out to my girlfriends, and we need to hear it. Even if you think your friends are tough as nails, everyone needs to be hyped up.
Mm-hmm. And we can't be tough as nails all the time. And I also like taking the pressure of, I'm similar to you in that I'll text my friends and I say, no response needed. Just wanted to let you know, I'm here when you're ready. I asked today for some hype. I texted my friend Jessica and I said, hey, Jess, I need a pep talk. And then I frantically texted, actually, I don't need it, but I want it. I know I can do this thing and I know I'll be good, but I want the pep talk because you know what it's like to be called too much. And I know you get me. I know you get this enthusiasm. So as somebody who has been called too much and yet has felt not enough, the people like you who are texting the friend, those are the people we need in our lives.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I still don't love being too much.
I like, you know, I think I'm really embracing my too muchness as a grown-ass woman is what I'm doing.
I like to refer to my too muchness. I'm like, you know, when you go to McDonald's and you get the 6-pack of chicken nuggets and you secretly wish there was a 7th one? I am the 7th chicken nugget. You didn't expect it. You didn't know you needed it, but it was a goddamn delight when you saw it in that box.
But it was a goddamn delight. You're a goddamn delight. That's a prize chicken nugget.
I'm on this mission to be like, hell yeah, please be too much.
So talk to me a little bit about how you got involved in what you're doing now.
I'm on my 7th career at the tender age of 36. I used to be a high school teacher, and I taught at a school for pregnant and parenting teens. Loved it. Went back to school, went into the world of sales in a startup company that sold an iPad app to teachers. And I was laid off totally unexpectedly. So I took everything I loved about teaching, everything I loved about sales, and I combined it and built a business where I actually was honest about what I wanted.
So one of the things that we're going to talk about today is the word mompreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about that after a quick break. I want to eradicate the word.
You and me both, sister.
Now, Amanda, there are a lot of words that I want to get rid of in the English language because I think that they are condescending to women.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is stay-at-home mom, because let's be honest, no one is just staying in the home.
No.
It should be work-at-home mom, and that would change the whole tenor of the conversation around mothers who work inside the home.
Who do we need to call to get that one changed? Because I'm signing that petition.
I don't know. God.
Great.
Don Draper. another word that I hate, is mompreneur. So when I was living in San Francisco, I had my first baby, and I met a lot of women who had been working in big jobs at big tech companies. I was working at a sad tech company called Yahoo at the time, but these women had jobs at Pinterest and Facebook and Meta and Lyft, all the fancy places. When they had kids, those companies, the majority of them, not all of them, they sucked to work for. They sucked, okay? They did not accommodate life as a parent who needs not even a flexible schedule, not even less hours, just grace. Just grace to be a human caring for other humans in the world. So they left those tech companies. A lot of them started their own businesses, and they were almost universally labeled mompreneurs.
Ugh. I have so many crunchy feelings because what pisses me off about that is that they're being labeled by other people as mompreneur. There are many people who self-identify as mompreneur, and I support women in business. This is not an attack on any one person and their choice to use the word. If it works for you, great. But it's such an ugly word. It is a bastardization, and I think it devalues both roles.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's the problem. It does devalue being a mother, and it devalues being an entrepreneur. And also, we never hear the word dadpreneur. We just hear really successful guy trying to launch a startup. There were whole conferences for mompreneurs.
Yep.
And it is a label that a lot of women have accepted and identified with, mostly because it's out there, right? And sometimes we have to accept these things as part of our identity. And none of this is to say, if you love being called a mompreneur,
Cool. Good on you.
Have at it. Yeah.
Have at it. I just don't like the fact that it seems to other you when it comes to the world of entrepreneurs at large.
Absolutely. I think it's a word that, like if somebody called me this, I just have this visceral reaction to it because it plants in this less than, I think, for both roles. I also think what the word mompreneur does is it assumes that being a mom is a credential for everything or being a business person is a credential for everything. So it's really muddying the waters and takes away from what I actually do. So the idea of, I'm a mompreneur. No, I'm an ambitious woman who helps other ambitious entrepreneurs and leaders get more of what they want, claim their spotlight, and not be afraid of their ambition. You don't know if I have a kid or not. I don't have to rely on that social capital.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. No dad walks into a conference and people automatically know how many kids he has or that he has kids at all, right?
Totally. Yeah. And here's one of like the biggest piss offs for me. In preparation for this episode, I did some research. I wrote out all of the caveats that I have because I'm a big fan of the yeah, but like I've explored all of the yeah, buts. One of the most frustrating things is that on Instagram, and I am no social media star by any means, I wasn't sure if I should post about my baby or not. I talked it through with my social media manager. Liz and I like deep dived into what do we say? What does it look like? Posted one picture of my one daughter the week after she was born, and it got the most likes and comments out of everything I have ever posted.
Well, I said this before when I was writing How to Be Married, actually, because this was before I had kids, but the Instagram and Facebook posts that got the most attention in my entire life were my engagement.
Yep.
And this is before I had kids. Mm-hmm. These platforms, the algorithms really reward intensely traditional female milestones. Of having children, of getting engaged, of getting married. All of those are wonderful things. They are things we should celebrate. But I post a picture of my book or a book deal, I get nada. Totally. Nothing. And I don't know. I don't think it's because my audience doesn't like it. I think the people following me really, really like that stuff. I don't think the Instagram and Facebook algorithms push those things to the top of people's feeds.
I actually don't need to share every element of my life. But the algorithm is going to support it when I share a picture on my anniversary of my wedding or a picture of my child on her birthday. So in some ways, I'm like, shit, I'm really losing at this social media game because I'm not willing to exploit my kid.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And yeah, every person in my contacts, you want a picture of my baby? Oh, I will send you far more than either of us think is appropriate. She is magical. And she is one piece of my life. She is not my identity.
Right. Exactly. And I think being a mother is one part of our life. And for some women, it's a bigger part than other parts.
Yep.
But it's not everything about us.
No, it can't be. But the same could be said for my business. My business is not the only part about me. I don't think everything has to be siloed, but I also don't think every part of the Venn diagram, if we have to have this big overlap between being a parent and being an entrepreneur.
No, I don't think we do. I hope we don't. I really do. So as an entrepreneur and as a mother, what do you find the biggest challenges are?
The biggest challenge for me, a sample size of one, is really reconciling how these two things work together. And to be somebody that fiercely said before I had a child, I want it all. Mm. So it's been redefining what it all looks like. And it's being really thoughtful of when does my kid come into play here? When does parenting come into play? Do I have to say that I have to be there for pickup at 5 p.m.? Or can I just say I have a hard stop at 4:30? So it's little changes like that and even facing the questioning of, the daycare is closed for professional development. How's that going to work for you? And I'm like, Dottie has two parents.
Two parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So exactly. It's challenging because it's made me confront my identity. And again, as somebody, I'm such a chicken shit. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get canceled for saying this. And yet, canceled from what?
Canceled from what at this point? I'm like, who's going to cancel me? What's going to happen?
But I don't want my gravestone to say wife and mother. That's not the impact I want to have. Sure, I want to raise a wonderful, magical human being that makes this world better. And I love my husband to death. And that's not it. That's not enough.
And that's not enough. And that's not enough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of the caveats I set out, Joe, when I was prepping is that this could be my tiny baby feelings looking for validation or proof that I'm an entrepreneur. Because I'm sure there are many someones listening to this and being like, whoa, this woman is uncomfortable in her role as a mom, or she's in denial, or wait till your kid's five, whatever bullshit is going to come up. And sure, maybe it's that. But I don't know. I mean, it's an identity wrestling conversation.
Right. Right. It is. Right. And I think that with women, I think, you know, women, maybe more than men, we're constantly wrestling with our identity. You know, am I a mother? Am I an author? Am I a business person? What am I? And what should define me? And what makes me most comfortable defining me? And they're conversations that can be tricky, to be honest. And so, yeah, I just think it's important for us to say these things out loud, to say what we want, to say what we're scared of, to say how we want to shape our identity. Because otherwise other people will shape them and choose them for us.
Absolutely. It's not just saying what we want. It's also asking for more. So here's what my gravestone will say. It will say, don't ask, don't get. I have this poster up on my wall. Joe, if we could, let's throw some to your listeners. I have to ask for what I want. And I firmly believe that the hardest part of asking is knowing what you want.
True.
So if you spend time knowing what you want, Joe, you do a really good job of this. I promise I'm not just here to pump your tires. We all know you want to be on the New York Times bestseller list.
I do. I want to be on the New York Times bestseller list. The Sicilian Inheritance is the best book I've ever written. And I'm just going to keep shouting that from the rooftops.
Yeah. So no more apologizing necessary. You're not a marketing monster. You're a marketing. We can find another M word.
I'm a guru.
Sure.
I'm not a marketing mama. That's not the word I want to use.
Absolutely not. No, because you and your uterus have absolutely nothing to do with the sale of your book. No offense to your uterus.
No offense.
It's done great
none
work.
Taken. None taken, my friends.
Right. So I'm like, yeah, let's ask for more. Let's figure out what the hell you want. And we don't have to caveat it with, well, I'm a mom. Or some people look at the word mompreneur and they go, oh, I know where her priorities are. She's not a real business person. And again, it's this pitting people against each other. I'm like, why are we fighting over this? Two things can be true and we don't have to make it a ugly ass word.
Exactly. Exactly. What is your advice for moms who want to channel their ambition more?
To me, it's really about stripping away all of the yeah buts, all of the things that come up when you say what you actually want that you feel like you have to whisper. So when people join me either in like a strategy call or on stages, I will tell them, I want to hear the thing that you're afraid to say out loud. Because I walk into rooms and I say, I want to be at the scale of Oprah. And it scares the shit out of people. But what it actually does for me is it helps me find the people on my team. Because the people who are on my team and who think big go, ooh, that's juicy. How do I help you? And the people who don't get it are uncomfortable. They laugh. They roll their eyes. They do this like, all right, bitch, see you in 10 years. Let's see if you've done it. So saying it out loud, making space for the thing that you kind of sort of think you want to do, but strip away all of the crutches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Channel the ambition, say what you want, and you're allowed to change your mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's a really, really important one, that you're allowed to change your mind, that just because you said something out loud doesn't mean that that's it, that that's the end all be all.
Totally. One of the, I forget if it's a Swedish or Norwegian word for redecide, which doesn't really exist in English. And I just love that concept. I get to redecide.
I get to redecide. This is not, that is a gift.
Yeah, I'm going to redecide what I want. When I am speaking in front of audiences, I've been called Demanda. I can get a little bossy, which, welcome. It's part of the 7th chicken nugget experience. I will tell people, I'm like, okay, I need you to write down 10 things that you would ask for if you knew the answer was yes.
Huh.
That uncovers a lot of our, like, deepest, darkest, what do I actually want? Because, again, the hardest part of asking is knowing what you want. Well, I can ask the question. Joe, how did I get on this podcast?
You literally asked me. You just said, I want to come on your podcast.
Yeah.
And I would also like to be on Brené Brown's show and Glennon Doyle's show.
Yeah, me too. Let's figure it out. So if you knew the answer was yes, would you ask? Send the damn email.
You just made me decide that I should really email Glennon right now. I mean, I've interviewed her before. She was on Committed with Abby, and it was a great interview.
Joe,
why haven't I emailed her and asked her if I could send the Sicilian inheritance yet?
Great question. Why not?
I don't know. I don't know the answer. Maybe I am scared. Also, maybe I'm tired.
Okay. Yes. Of course you're tired. But really, this is like drive-by fire coaching here. What's the worst case scenario?
The worst case scenario is she says that they're booked, because no one's rude and says, don't come on my show. Everyone just says they're booked.
Okay.
And the world doesn't end.
Right. So she's booked and it doesn't work out. Are you going to be okay?
I'm going to be totally fine. I'm going to be fine. Yeah. Yeah.
I become an annoying 5-year-old sometimes, where people will share the big thing and they're terrified. I'm like, okay, it doesn't work. Then what happens? And we go through this path. I'm like, okay, and then what happens? And then what happens? And I don't think there has been one time where someone's been like, I will be completely destitute. My life will be over. So, yeah, send the email. Find the contact information. This is a chance to put out to the network, hey, who is listening to this that knows Brené Brown? Because Amanda and Joe, we need to talk to you. Yeah. We want to be on your podcast. We have good shit to say.
I love this. Will you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Absolutely. You can find me at theamandawagner.com. That is THE. And you can find me on Instagram at theamandawagner. I write on there periodically. I have committed to publishing 40 things this year, short form, long form, wherever they are. I'm writing 40 things. Big thank you, Joe, to your interview with Jamie Attenberg.
That was so good. I loved that.
Oh my God, it's so good. I just have this, I buy pretty much every book from authors on your podcast.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
You can find me at theamandawagner.com. And if you know Oprah, Brené, Adam Grant, let us know. But go email Glennon for now.
All right, fine. We're going to end right here, and I'm going to email Glennon Doyle. Literally, I'm going to do it right now before I do anything
else. Please call me when it works.
I will.
Call me when it works.
I will. I'm doing it right now. Right now. All right. And that is all we have for today. I did email Glennon Doyle. I did. I haven't heard back yet, but you know what? I sent that email. And I love what Amanda said about what would you do if you knew the answer was yes. Right? It's very freeing, and I'm here for it. I am here for it. And I don't mind talking about my naked ambition to make this book a bestseller and the book of the summer, but I'm also prepared for what happens if that doesn't happen, because the bestseller list is hard to break into, and that will also be okay. It will all be okay. I'm feeling very zen at the moment because I am operating on 3 hours sleep. My operating on 3 hours sleep is essentially like me being on weed. I'm very chill. Now go have a great day, do something nice for yourself, and hype up an awesome woman in your life.